Modern3 Media.
For nearly 15 years, Branches has been the place to go to find help for mental, behavioral, and emotional needs. We also have become more and more aware of how closely those things are attached to our physical well-being. And that's why Branches is also a place to turn for wellness. Branches weight loss, wellness care, and med management are important components in the overall ministry and message that Branches has to the Good Neighbor community. We encourage you to turn to Branches to find healing and hope in the midst of a very difficult and hurting world. Let's face it, the world is just a messy place. There's probably not one of us that hasn't heard a lesson or some information at some point and said, hey, with all that's going on around me, what difference does that make? I'm Dr. Mike Courtney. I'm a counselor, a lifelong recoverer, a husband, a father, a business owner, a grandfather, and I love to ask this question, what difference does that make? Welcome to What Difference Does That Make, a podcast that's dedicated to helping people live healthier, happier, and maybe holier lives in what can sometimes be a pretty messed up world. My name is Mike Courtney, and today we have a great story for you to hear. And when it's all over, I think you'll be asking, what difference does that make? But before we get to the story, I want to get to the story maker. My good friend and producer, David Wilkinson. Hi, David.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
Good. It's good to see you. I haven't seen you in a long time.
Truly has been too long. It's nice to catch up.
Yeah. We started into this kind of a couple of month pattern of doing 2 months worth of work.
Yes.
Which is a good thing. But I do hate the fact that we don't visit as much as we used to.
Absence makes the heart grow fonder, Mike.
Well, I don't know if I go that far.
I may have pushed it too much.
It just got weird there for a second. It is good to see you.
Thank you.
I want to tell you a little bit about what we're doing today.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
Ashley Woods is just an amazing young woman. She has a story of recovery in her own right. And I've known Ashley for quite a while. She and her husband, Tyler, great friends. Tyler's in a Bible study with me. What I didn't know is that through the pandemic, Ashley wrote a book. And the title of the book just intrigued me. The title is Tell Me Quickly.
Yes.
And it's just kind of some fast, succinct answers to discovering your own behavioral health and mental health. And so as soon as I found out about that, I asked Ashley if she would sit down. And we just had a wonderful, fun conversation. So I can't wait for our listeners to hear and meet Ashley Woods.
And that's actually the name of this episode too, the title of her book.
Yes, Tell Me Quickly. That's where that came from. One thing we're doing a little bit different for a few episodes here, you know, we've always done a teaching and then the conversation. But in this case, the conversations were a little bit longer, and so we left the teaching out. So we're not going to do that. But I think...
Except...
You've come up with an idea.
I've thrown a monkey wrench into that. I've got an idea for you and me in these segments here.
This is my podcast, and there will be no monkey wrenches. I'm just telling you right now.
For our listening audience, the only surprise about what we're about to do is that you will be surprised by the questions. You know I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
But you literally have no idea what I'm going to ask you. So basically, what I thought would be fun is to introduce this segment. It's a very creative title. It's called Ask Mike.
That is good.
Isn't that
good? You had to think about that.
It took me a little while to come to that. But basically, Ask Mike is just a series of questions that I've put here in this bowl, and I'm going to pull out the one that I'm looking at, which is number 7. Very good.
Oh,
this is a good one. All right, Mike. So here's the question for today's podcast.
That I've never heard.
Are you ready for this?
I'm ready. I don't know.
Here's the question. You actually once told me when I came to you for help that rather than black or white, some things just are.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering what that means to you.
Wow, that's good.
Yeah.
In my own, you know, every story and every answer to every question somehow circles back to my own
recovery.
Okay.
And one of the great blessings that came out of my own recovery, David, was learning to live in the present, to just be here, and not to have an answer, not to have to figure everything out, not to always know the reason behind everything. The serenity prayer that we pray, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. There just are some things. And the sooner I am able to be at peace with that and not have to have an answer, I think the healthier that I am, and the more I'm able to live in the moment. I don't know if that's what I meant way back then, but that's what I mean now.
I love that. And that's, it's so freeing.
Yeah.
To not have to have all the answers.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
to leave that to God.
Yeah.
You know,
I say often to our counselors in kind of training them, help them, I don't know is a perfectly acceptable answer. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. And that's all right.
Mike, I had a job back in the early 90s that I got apparently because my answer to one of the questions was, I don't know.
Good.
I found out months later, that's why we hired you, because you didn't come across arrogant.
You're
like,
willing to say,
oh, well, then I'm going to be great on your staff because I don't know a lot. There's a lot I don't know.
That's right. Well, that's our Ask Mike segment. How did that go for you?
I feel like that was a 100%. Success. And we'll have more. We'll do this again in the upcoming episodes. But Mike, tell our audience where we can send them.
Yeah.
To learn more.
You know, one of the things that we have struggled with over the last couple of seasons of doing this is having that good solid landing page.
Yeah.
I do a lot of writing. I do a lot of blogs. I do some interviews. I do this. And where can people go to find that stuff? So we have settled on the Branches blog website, which, speaking of creative names, has a very creative name, branchesblog.com.
Yep.
So I would encourage people to go to the branchesblog.com website, and there to sign up on our mailing list. You can find all the stuff that we provide. You can find information about Branches. But we'd like to have a record of your visit. And then when special things come out, you'll automatically be notified. So I encourage people to go to the branchesblog.com website, sign up, and be a part of that community of content sharers.
Wonderful. And of course, I will put that in the show notes for our audience, branchesblog.com. And so, up next, you're talking with Ashley Woods.
Yes.
Tell me quickly.
And speaking of show notes, Ashley has, I said that we would put some things in there for her about where to find her book, that kind of thing. So I think it's going to be a wonderful episode. I think people are going to enjoy this. I'd say let's get started. I'm here with a great young friend of mine. I don't have many young friends. It's nice to have a young friend. I'm here with a great young friend of mine, Ashley Woods. Ashley and Tyler have been friends of ours for, I don't know, 10 years, maybe 8 years, something like that. She is a young mother. When we met, she was a young professional woman, and she and Tyler actually worked for the same company. She is a mother of two. She also is a wonderful writer. She's found a really unique way to tell some of her story, and written a book that is beginning to, I think, touch a chord with people. And I'm proud of you for writing it. So, Ashley, welcome. It's good to see you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. How many podcasts have you done, by the way?
This is my first, so go easy on me.
Really? I just figured, you know, you'd probably been on the Today Show. And
yeah, that's next, right after this.
Usually, that is what happens. People don't know it, but this podcast is a feeding ground for the Today Show and Good Morning America and that kind of thing.
Once I put Dr. Mike Courtney on my resume,
you're in.
The offer's flooding, yeah.
Hey, it's good to see you. How are the boys?
They are good. They're little. They're 5 and 1, so it's wild in my house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bo is your oldest.
Yes.
Bo is, I think you said before we started, like pre-kindergarten?
Yes, pre-K. He loves learning. He goes to a Christian school and he has to wear the chapel outfit. Those are the days he gets his worst behavior reports because he hates the chapel shoes.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Now, I do need to say that Tyler, your husband, who is a good friend of mine, is a big guy. Tyler is 6'4", 6'5", maybe. So Bo is about 6'3".
Soon to be. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. 5 year olds. He's a big kid. He's a big guy.
It's going to be hard to feed them. Yeah. I'm nervous.
Yeah. And tell us about the baby.
He's 15 months. Zeke. He's a redhead. We were not prepared for that. Yeah, so he's fiery, like the stereotypical redhead.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, my son Jacob, who's a redhead.
That's right.
And surprised us with that. And then his son Caleb, that's really almost the same age as Zeke, that's a redhead. So,
They're going to power up against us.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And we're friends with Jacob, and he informed us that. I can't remember some statistic that like 10% of CEOs are redheads. They really flaunt that.
Jacob has all of the facts to let you know that he's the hero of all of his stories.
They're superior.
That's good. Well, thanks for being with me. Thanks for addressing this. And when I first heard about your book, I immediately said, I want to talk to Ashley about what prompted it. You know, we all have stories. Everybody has stories. But we're not all willing to be courageous and tell those stories in a public way. And I thought you found a very kind of unique way to offer some hope for people. So before we talk about the story behind the story, tell me a little bit about the book.
It's a short book. Uh-huh. I called it Tell Me Quickly because it's a quick read.
Yeah.
I was really trying to take some complex emotions and issues like trauma and addiction and talk about them clearly but concisely so that hopefully people would actually read it and get some healing for themselves.
And it's powerful. I mean, it's really powerful. I want you to know, I think you've done a great job of addressing, again, some things that most people just want to sweep under the rug, addressing them in a good, clear, concise way from a, and I don't say this in any negative way, from a layman's standpoint that really, that helps people come to grips with some of the things that, what was your hope for that? Was it just cathartic to write some of this? What prompted the setting down and writing of the book?
It did start out just being initially for me.
Yeah.
You know, I've had a couple mental health crises. I've had my own personal pain and trauma to process and walk through. But as I continued to write and share with other people, it just kind of morphed into something to help other people heal too.
Yeah, that's good. In the 12 steps in Celebrate Recovery, we say often, God never wastes a hurt.
Yes.
And I especially admire those people that are willing to allow their hurt to be used for others, for the good of others.
Yes.
So, do you mind? You know, we didn't set the ground rules before we started this conversation. Do you mind just telling a little bit about your story, about the story behind the book? What I asked you what prompted you to actually write the book, but what prompted the whole story?
Sure. I think, you know, my early 20s is when I kind of started my mental health journey. And it felt forced on me. It's not really something that I wanted. I dealt with severe depression in my early 20s, 22, 23. I had a near suicide attempt, and that is eventually what led me to get help. And so while it felt forced at the time, I can see now that it was God sanctifying me and forcing me to get help and forcing me to talk about some of these things. It was His grace to just kind of not let me sweep it under the rug. So I continued to heal, but then about 4 years ago, I hit another mental health crisis, rock bottom for myself. And I just felt like God had abandoned me, and I just felt alone, and I had got caught up in addiction and was struggling with that. And so then that led me into recovery. And I continued to just work. That's hard work. But God guided me the whole way. And so then after so many years of being in recovery, I started to record some of the things that God had taught me. There's another recovery saying that says, if you want to keep what you've got to give it away.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. And so I started to capture some of those lessons.
That's powerful. Let me go back to the first step in that. And you used a really interesting word. I think it's a great word. I think it's just the right word. You said in that first mental health crisis that you went through, you realized that God was sanctifying you. Mm. What? Tell me about. Now I grew up with that word. A lot of people probably haven't. They don't know for sure what that means. What do you mean when you say God was sanctifying you that? And how did He sanctify you in that pain?
I think the biggest thing that God was doing in me was taking me from leading from a place of strength, because mm-hmm. my husband and I had been in full-time ministry before that, mm-hmm. and I feel like that is where I was leading from. But through depression, the humility, the humanness and recognizing my own weakness, through that whole process, God took me from leading from a place of strength to leading from a place of weakness, mm. and that has been a huge part of my sanctification.
Yeah, that's neat. You are, and this doesn't surprise you. I probably have said it to you. I know I've said it about you. You are a strong young woman, a strong personality. And again, that's a good thing. I don't say that in any negative way.
I'm opinionated. That's what he's trying to say.
He's trying to say nicely. Yeah. I was trying to think of different words. So it's interesting that of all the things that God would do, that would be the thing. Very often I think, okay, God's going to take my strength and He's going to build on that. Right. But I hear you saying, no, God took what I saw as a strength, at least, and kind of broke it away and gave me a whole different approach.
Right.
It's good. How did you and Tyler do in that first step? How did you and Tyler navigate that? That's before the boys,
right?
So it's just the two of you trying to figure out how to do life with some very severe depression and all of that. Mm-hmm. What did that do to you all as a couple?
First of all, finding the word depression, because I was just kind of falling apart, and yeah. the people around me didn't really understand. I didn't even have a word for it, and so right. then once I found that word depression, that helped so much in getting help and understanding. I do think that was probably overwhelming for both of us,
right.
but to be, for Tyler to be watching that and not be equipped. Neither of us were really equipped for something like that, but the professionals and outside help is what helped guide us, and being humble enough to receive that outside help was important.
You know, this is completely a side note, and I've never even thought to ask you this question before, but you were in full-time ministry. How did the church respond? Were they helpful, not helpful? Tell me about the church.
Yes, my own expectations of the church and mental health have had to change.
That's a good point. They don't know. They don't know.
Sometimes they operate as counselors and they're not trained as counselors.
Yeah.
And I don't fault them in that, but yes, they did not completely understand all the issues that I was going through in either crises, because I was at two different churches. Mm-hmm. We were in a different city the first time
right.
and then the second time as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know where the saying comes from a old movie or something probably, but they shoot their wounded, and I've heard that applied to the church, that very often, again, maybe sometimes because they don't know what to do, but mm-hmm. of all illnesses, emotional, behavioral, mental stress, it does seem the church more often than not doesn't know what, so they just shoot their wounded in that. So,
right,
yeah. So God kind of moved you a step in the right direction. You're healed. You're completely healed. This is never going to happen again. I'm never going to have a struggle. And then all of a sudden you find yourself 4 years later and you're back in a emotional crisis. Tell me about that.
There is a lot of shame that comes with that, you know, to go through one crisis and then, well, there was a lot of shame for me.
Yeah.
There shouldn't be shame, but there, I was experiencing shame to be like, you know, I've had this one crisis and, I've already been in counseling for years and now here I am with another crisis. Yeah. I feel like just a wreck. I'm a, you know, I'm a mental health mess. I'm making things hard on my husband, you know, all of those kind of things come in. But now being through even, you know, more of that, I see that they each built, you know, I wasn't ready for recovery whenever I started in my early 20s. All of that counseling built up for the right time. Because it's all about God's timing, and I wasn't ready until I was ready.
Yeah, that's good. That's really good, Ashley. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, some of my story, and you know, the difference in your story and my story is about 20 years. It took me 20 more years than it did you to figure that out. But yeah, I have very often felt like, God, why didn't you do that way back then? You know, the very first time I had a struggle, why didn't you do that then? And there's, first of all, there's something about God's timing we just don't know. Yeah. And secondly, there's something about my readiness that we just don't know. And we just, we have to be, you know, God has us at the right place at the right time.
That's right.
So you and Tyler navigated through that. That created a different kind of set of struggles for you, different kind of conflict. How, what was that like?
Yeah, the first time around, Tyler was just kind of walking beside me in those things. Mm-hmm. But the second time around, he was getting help himself. And that is something that I learned to be very important, not just with addiction, but really any mental health thing. The entire family has a right to recover and to get their own help over that issue just because of the chaos and confusion that it can bring.
Yeah, yeah. What did that look like in him? So you're battling some addictive behavior. Some of the depression is back again. Mm-hmm. For him, what did that look like? His mental chaos.
I think I hate to speak for him, but you know, even just in my own working the 12 steps and making amends to him, I just there were some things that I assumed that had created wreckage in him. Mm-hmm. And so one would just be, I think, insecurity.
Yeah.
You know,
that's good.
And so that was one of my amends to him, just that I'm sorry for making you feel insecure.
Yeah. That's good.
It's not your fault.
Yeah. We say this isn't true and we don't want it to be true, but most of the time when we're in a marriage and in a good marriage, even when there's stuff going on, there, you know, that old Jerry Maguire line, "You complete me." You know, there's a part of that, which is a horrible line, by the way.
Right. Okay.
But there is a part of that that's taking place. So when my spouse is struggling or hurting or going through things, I feel like there must be something wrong with me because I can't fix this or I can't make her better. And so I'm sure he's feeling, you know, what kind of man am I that I can't make my wife feel better? I can't heal her in this. So.
Yes, and you're right that some of that, you know, I need to do my part and make amends over the things that I've done, but there is still a level of him having to deal with his insecurities himself and me staying, knowing when to come close for intimacy, but then also stay on my side of the street and say, I'm sorry, but you also have to, you know, have to clear my side of the street and you have to clear yours yourself.
That's
so good. That it doesn't become that toxic. We complete each other. We rescue one another.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I use an exercise with couples of hula hoops, the three hoops. And so very often that language will say, you have to stay in your own hoop. And so I will say to Doris, I hate this. I'm so sorry for the pain that you're going through, but this is not my hoop. This is not my deal. I'm here for you, and I'll stand here beside you, but you got to figure this out on your own. So, yeah, that's good.
Yes. Good. Talking specifically about addiction, because that could be used broadly, the reconciliation process is very long, you know, and something I learned early in recovery was to not make any promises, just make changes
to
your
life. Oh,
that's good. Yeah. Yeah. And improve things over time.
You should put that in a book.
The next one.
Yeah, not
tell me quicker.
Yeah, or tell me a little slower, you know. Tell me again quickly.
Slow
that
down
would be a good. Tell me again. Yeah. That's good. That's great, Ashley. So, it has been fun and exciting and a blessing to see you all and see what God is doing in your life and how he is healing you. And I did know that you and Tyler and Jacob and Allison, my son and daughter-in-law, have become friends, which is really a fun thing. You probably will have another recovery to go through after being friends with Jacob for a while.
Right.
But it has been, so I've kept up with you through that. It's been really fun to see that take place.
They're great.
What about now? So what does life look now on this side of recovery? And let me say, my opinion of recovery, yours might be different. My opinion of recovery is it is a lifelong process. I'll be, you know, people said to me, when did you finish the 12 step? I haven't finished the 12 step. I've started over 30 times, but I'll never finish. So my opinion of recovery is that it's a lifelong thing. But on this side of the crisis, how does life look different? What's it look like now for you all?
I 100% agree that it's a lifelong process, that it'll never be over. And the minute that I think that I've arrived at some level, then, you know, pride comes before destruction. It still looks like for me is going to recovery meetings. That's where mm-hmm. I'm at, 12-step anonymous mm-hmm. recovery meetings. So I continue to do that, serving there and just trying to be a part of the conversations around mental health and addiction, like I'm trying to do with this book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's neat. And again, I didn't mean to drag Tyler into this conversation as much, but his recovery has continued, and him learning how to relate to you, and y'all having different kinds of conversations, I imagine, that kind
yes.
of thing.
Yeah, and he did, I mean, I guess I'm outing him, but he did like Anon programs and he did his own recovery steps too, but it did take him time. I think it's normal to think, oh, let's just get the addict better. Like
right.
the meetings are for you,
right.
you know? So I think about a year of just me doing those. And early on, I was going to meetings. Again, we had small children. I was going to meetings 4 or 5 times a week.
Yeah.
You know, just any chance I could get, because I was in that early stage of recovery. That's, I heard one person call it damage control. That's how it feels sometimes that first year.
Right.
And so then once that kind of, after a year of that, I feel like that's when we had conversations about maybe him.
This would be helpful for you. Yeah.
Yeah, as well.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that's good. Yeah, the statement that Doris and I have made, that I have made about Doris, is that we discovered she was as sick as I was. I made her that way, but it doesn't change the fact that she had a lot of work that she needed to do. And she also was willing to engage in that healing process, which is really good, really powerful. So let me ask you about that, because Ashley, I would love to say, I've heard your story 1,000 times, you know, people, but it is shamefully, painfully too rare that, you chose, maybe we're back to that opinionated, stubborn, strong will, but something in you said, I will get better. I will get better. Can you speak to that?
Things that I thought were strengths for so long did play in my favor, but as I was working the steps, I had to take a minute because those strengths gave me an inflated ego, mm-hmm. you know. And so once I was working through the steps, I had to look at what they call character defects, mm-hmm. and then I started once I was stripping away all the denial and was open to being vulnerable and healing, I started to see that some of those things can be weaknesses.
Mm-hmm.
And so then it took me some time working through that to even get onto the other side and kind of give myself grace,
yeah.
because I was covered in shame at the time. But to give myself grace and say, you know, that perfectionist mentality that I have come to hate, I need to realize that that is what gave me so much drive to get better.
Boy, that's good.
Yeah.
It's really good. There are so many gray areas in recovery. We want it to be black and white. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, what I thought was good, I found out was bad. And then when I admitted it was bad, it became good again. You know, God right. used that. So yeah, that's your story is so right on and so good for people to hear that a lot of times a life of recovery and a life of addiction don't look a whole lot different. It's just what's going on in my heart. And I know, and I know the motives behind the choices I make now and that kind of thing. So,
yes.
Yeah, that's good.
There's something I wanted to add about just the shame, because I think one aspect that was really hard for me was that I had shame around being a recovering addict and a mom.
Oh, that's
that part
good.
Was, yeah. That part was very hard for me because a lot of, part of my active addiction was whenever I was staying at home with my son. And I just had, felt so much shame over that. I spent a yeah. year in recovery meetings just crying, talking about that, you know. And, but that was what was necessary for me to walk through yeah. the shame to the other side. And then eventually, since we've discussed amends, I couldn't make direct amends to a young child, but my living amends yes. was that whenever I am with him, I'm going to be as present as possible.
Wow. Yeah, that's good. And this is my opinion, but it's my podcast, so I can give you my opinion. My opinion is that Bo is far better off having a mom who has walked through the fire and come out on the other side in recovery than if he had had a perfect mom who never stubbed her toe and never messed up. There's lessons. Again, he'll never even know what they're about, but there's lessons he will learn from watching your life that he wouldn't have got otherwise. So I just think that's powerful. Doris's dad was a saint. I mean, he really was. He was a saint, just perfect, godly man, and incredible. And yet, there's some great struggles that Doris has had in her life from living with that, as opposed to seeing somebody who has stumbled and fallen and gotten back up and seeing God redeem and regenerate them.
I agree. That is something I did not realize until I got into recovery, and you're just around so many different people and so many stories, because people's stories don't look the exact same.
Yeah.
Like, addiction doesn't discriminate against different people. And right. so for me, I had a dad that was absent and abandoned me. And so I thought, well, if somebody has a godly dad, yeah. then they're not going to have any issues. But that's not always the case.
Right.
And sometimes you can still have maybe unrealistic expectations for yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
If your parents not talking about their struggles yeah. and stories as well.
Yeah. Yeah, and sometimes they weren't godly and perfect. They just, like you said, they just weren't talking about it.
Right.
So they never, you know, and you've been honest and candid, at least in just in the way you're living, so that your kids will see the difference. I always say I could give my sons two gifts. One is I could be a perfect dad. I blew that a long time ago. So the second gift I could give them is they could see me fight to overcome that and live a better life, a different life. And in my mind, that's a far, far better gift to do.
That's hard. That's
yeah.
hard, but that's powerful.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's good.
To stay vulnerable every day.
Yeah, yeah.
I like that. It's hard.
I know you find this hard to believe, but we share a little bit of that perfectionism and arrogance. and so it's easy for me to say, oh, you know, 17 years clean and sober, I got this thing whipped. I got this all figured out. And that's not true. I'm still every day making amends and doing looking at my character defects and doing, personality surveys and those kinds of things. So it's a lifelong process.
It also helps being in the rooms and sometimes seeing people that get to that place after 10 years.
They yeah.
think that they're finished, and then they come back into the rooms
yeah.
after a relapse.
Yeah, that's yeah. good. And, you know, let me make a confession to you, Ashley, and because you're heading down this path with your book, and I think what God's going to do with that. But I say this to people all the time. I'm really the most selfish person in the world, because what I do for a living is that helps keep me clean and sober, because I'm in the room every day helping people and giving it away and that kind of thing. So Yeah, I think God puts us in a place where He knows we need to be, and I think He's going to do that with you. So let's go back, kind of finish with that. Thank you for doing this. It's been really good. I appreciate you doing this. Come back to the books, how we started it one more time. Tell me quickly. That was the name of the book. I wasn't saying to you.
Hurry up, tell me.
Yeah, hurry up, get this
over
with.
We got 2 minutes left.
Tell me about it. Tell me what you put into that. What's it look like? Tell me about the book.
It's short writings, poems, and listen, I did not like poetry, or I didn't think that I liked poetry to start off.
Yeah, that's one of the things I was going to talk to you about. That it was interesting to me that you use poetry a lot in that. That's good.
Right, yes, but it did just come through short sentences, again, just about trauma, addiction, depression, family dysfunction, and then also just God, just walking with God and what that has looked like for me.
That's good. I see it as a kind of a mirror that people can hold up in front of them, and they can find themselves in that somewhere, and it looks different. I think different people would read your book and have all kinds of different responses to it, but they're seeing themselves reflected somehow in that. Yes. I think it's powerful. I think God's gonna use it. That's good.
Thank you.
It's available. David, our producer, I have a producer.
You're big stuff.
This is pretty. This is a leeway to the Today Show and Good Morning America. Yeah. David will put in the show notes more about Tell Me Quickly, but it is available. People can order it on
Amazon. And it's online with Barnes & Noble.
Okay.
If people don't like Amazon.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true. You may be canceled just for saying that.
Right.
That's good. Ashley, it's so good. Yeah, thank you for doing this. This is really, really a neat thing. I appreciate you taking the time to do it.
Thanks for having me.
What do you do next? What's the next thing?
I'll see how this goes. And then maybe I will. I would love to write more.
Yeah, yeah.
But I am still working full-time, and I have 2 little ones, so I always have to make sure they know that they're more important than a book.
And that's good.
Manage that's good. My time well.
Yeah. Thanks, Ashley.
Thank you.
Good to talk to you. Ashley Wood did an amazing job. One of the problems with an audio podcast is that you can't see facial expressions, you can't read body language, you can't get a picture of the person that's speaking. I wish you could meet Ashley. I wish you could see her. She is angelic is just a good word. Kind, sweet, gentle, small young woman who has such a powerful, powerful story. And she did a great job presenting that. I'm so glad you got to hear that and be a part of that. There's an interesting story in Revelation chapter 12. It's an ancient story. It happens long before time begins. Michael, the archangel, is in a battle with Lucifer, with Satan. Lucifer is God's worship leader. He's beautiful as any creature you can imagine. And he begins to read his own press clippings. He gets full of himself, and he rises up in rebellion in heaven. He goes to war, takes a third of the angels, goes to war against Lucifer and his angels, and Satan, the devil, is cast out. Satan is not his name. Satan is his job description. Satan literally means the accuser. And a little later in this story, we read, and the accuser of the brethren accuses them before God day and night. It's just an interesting, almost overlooked story, and yet so important because it sets the framework for everything that has happened in the thousands of years since then. The story kind of ends with this thought in verse 11. And they, that's the saints, that's me and you, and they overcame him, Satan, the accuser, and they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb and the word of their testimony. Isn't that an interesting thing? Satan is accusing us. He's battling us. He's telling us that we're less than, that we'll never be good enough, that we'll never measure up, that we'll never get over our failures of the past. He is telling Ashley, Ashley, no one ever wants to listen to your story. Nobody will ever listen to you again. The accuser, and John writes, and we overcome that by the blood of the Lamb and the word of our testimony. Our story is the thing that God uses to bring about our healing and our overcoming. So I want to say three things to you very, very quickly. Your story is a gift. I wish my story was somebody else's story. I wish my story was different. I wish my story looked like this or looked like that. Your story, whatever your story is, it's your story, and it's a gift. It's a gift that God has given you to do something with. The second thing is, your story is a blessing. There are some people, there are probably lots of people that will identify uniquely with your story, and they need to hear your story. Some of you know that I have written my story in a little book called Failure and How I Achieved It. I can't tell you how many phone calls I have gotten that begin this way: I read your story. Your story is a blessing to someone else. God has given it to you as a gift, and he intends for you to use it as a blessing for someone else. But here's the third thing. Your story is a weapon. It's a weapon. They overcame the enemy by the blood of the Lamb and the word of their testimony. So here's my story. Satan comes to me and says, if people only knew, if they really knew you, nobody would listen to your podcast if they knew you. Nobody would ever want to hear you preach again if they knew you. Nobody would ever come to you for counseling if they knew you. And I say, Satan, it's in a book. They know it. They've read it. I can turn that story around and use it as a weapon against him. I don't know what your story is, but I do know this about it. It's a gift. It's a blessing. And it's a weapon that God has given you to overcome. Thank you, Ashley, for telling your story. And thank you, the listener, for your story and for using it well. So what difference does that make? God's given you a story, and he wants you to use it. And when you do use it, you'll bless others, and you'll overcome everything that Satan's trying to do in your own life for you. So go out and tell your story. And by the way, a part of your story is this. Remember to love yourself today. Because God does.
What Difference Does That Make with Dr. Mike Courtney is part of the Mana 3 Media Network. It is hosted by Dr. Mike Courtney and is produced and edited by me, David Wilkinson. You can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. We'd love for you to subscribe to What Difference Does That Make wherever podcasts are downloaded. Be sure to check out our episode show notes. You can learn more about Branches Counseling Center on Facebook and Instagram, and you can check out more podcasts by Mana 3 Media, including my own, Dad Matters, on Instagram, at Mana 3 Media. That's M-A-N-A, the number 3, Media.
To find out more about Branches, we encourage you to go to branchescounselingcenter.com or call 615-904-7170.